Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
The Eagles are hiring Indianapolis Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni as their next head coach. There was a sense, this is from Adam Schefter, in league circles that the race had narrowed to two candidates, Josh McDaniels and Sirianni, who had been the Colts coordinator the past three seasons. The Eagles ended up hiring the less heralded name, but one who continued to gain steam inside the Eagles organization, the more they called around about him. Sirianni had previously spent three seasons as an assistant with the Kansas City Chiefs and five seasons with the Chargers. He is a protege. Protege of the head coach. That's what he is. And what you should know is that the Indianapolis Colts are obviously coached by not only a guy who is a former quarterback in his own right, in Frank Reich, somebody who was incredibly well regarded for how he dealt with Carson Wentz, and the reason that Philip Rivers went there instead of retiring last year, before he retired this year, was Frank Reich. And of course, Sirianni was there as well during their time together with the Chargers. The point is that, and I do think there's a parallel. Philip Rivers, I believe, will be a Hall of Famer. But Philip Rivers is not a perfect quarterback, but the best parts of Philip Rivers were made better when he was with Frank Reich, either in San Diego or in Indianapolis, even when many of his skills had faded. And that's essentially what Sirianni is going to be asked to do, right? He's going to be asked to find the positives and make them exponentially better than the negatives. That's really what it kind of comes down to. Nick Sirianni, though, this is a franchise-defining hiring. You're like, really? Yeah. It's a franchise-defining hire. Because Sirianni, who's young, has been around it. I mean, look, last 8 years, all he's done is quarterbacks, and he's had multiple ones. I mean, think about what he inherited. Thought he was going to have Andrew Luck forever. Then they had Jacoby Brissett, and then he ends up with Philip Rivers. And that's been his life the last 3 years. And Sirianni, of course, was in Kansas City when they had Alex Smith. Go back and look. And Alex Smith was not the perfect quarterback, but you find a way to make it work based upon that quarterback's skill set, that quarterback's mentality, how that quarterback likes to play. I don't know if I like it, but it doesn't actually matter because this hiring is about one thing and one thing only, fixing Carson Wentz. That's it. You know, that's the, there's an old Rodney Dangerfield joke. Do you guys remember the late Rodney Dangerfield? Rodney Dangerfield, comedian, probably best remembered for his role in Caddyshack. I think that's probably, and he had the, I'll tell you, I get no respect at all. No respect, right? But he was a longtime famous comedian for his one-liners. And I used to listen to a cassette tape of Rodney Dangerfield at Dangerfield's. He had his own comedy club in New York. And one of his lines was, you know, I told my wife, she told me to take out the garbage. I told her, you cooked it. You take it out, right? That's what Howie Roseman has to do with his quarterback. Like, it doesn't even matter necessarily if they think that Carson Wentz is as good as his contract. It doesn't matter if they truly believe he can lead them back to a Super Bowl and get back to that MVP form. It doesn't matter. You cooked it. You take it out. Howie Roseman signed him to this gargantuan deal. The franchise is locked in, is almost crippled by it. he ain't retiring, so you can't write off any of this money like maybe the Steelers can. All right. So you got to fix it. And you cooked it, you take it out. That's what's taking place in Philadelphia. You know, it doesn't have to do with the defense. Do they have to draft better? Sure. Do they have to put better guys in position? Yes. They got to fix the offensive line? Absolutely. But Chris Ballard isn't coming over to help Howie Roseman. Chris Ballard, of course, rebuilt that offensive line. So the personnel decisions are going to be, this is Roseman saying like, hey, this is my quarterback. I'm going to ride. It's my ride or die. I got to find a way. This is the guy who has the best skill set because he knows the offense. He knows the style of play in which they've used to be successful. He knows how Frank is with people. He knows how he was with people. And I'm sure that after thorough research and talking with Frank Reich, he knows how Carson Wentz can best be used. I think it makes sense. But I also think it is a move solely about one guy. You can tell me there are other players of importance with the Philadelphia Eagles, but they fired one coach and hired another for one reason, the quarterback. They got to get this right. Once you have that big deal, you got, and it should be almost a warning to Sean McVay. Now, I know McVay only has 1 year left with Goff, but this fighting with quarterbacks and diminishing the respect level of the quarterback, no matter how bad Jared Goff plays, he's got to continue the Sean McVay thing of, if something goes wrong, it's my fault. Something goes right, it's his fault. Why? Because your career is forever tied to the quarterback. And this isn't anything new. In college, I mean, look, what happened? What's the downfall of Mack Brown at Texas? Right? Mack Brown had a succession of incredible quarterbacks. And then he had Garrett Gilbert, who was all everything, who replaced Colt McCoy in the national championship game, and he just wasn't as good or as dynamic or as respected as Colt, as Vince Young, as Chris Sims. You know, like, you go back through, and there was like five straight stud Texas quarterbacks. Then they couldn't figure it out. I mean, look at Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. He hadn't been able to figure out the quarterback position. And that's his expertise. Hell, I mean, look, there's been lots of problems with the Cleveland Browns in the time in between their 18 years of playoff experience. But what's the running, you know, joke on the internet or on jerseys is all the quarterbacks that they have gone through. I mean, what happened to John Elway? He won a Super Bowl, and granted, Peyton Manning couldn't throw a football. But the previous years he could. You lose Peyton Manning, and it's been a turnstile there. It's the warning to the Dallas Cowboys about the thought of letting Dak Prescott walk. But there were some lean years before they found Tony Romo. Right? Quincy Carter was your starting quarterback for a year. Yikes. It wasn't terrible. You got to fix the quarterback position. You got to fix the quarterback position. The quarterback is the kitchen of the NFL house, right? I mean, if you're going to go buy a house, you know, obviously it's about location, 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 location. But when you walk into the house, it's about the kitchen. If the kitchen's screwed up and you can't fix the kitchen, you can't fix the kitchen layout or whatever, then the house is screwed up. Why? Because that's where you spend most of your time. The kitchen. And if you can't figure out the quarterback, then it ain't going to work. You know, especially when you're paying him $30+ million guaranteed for a couple of years. And if you get rid of him, you have to pay even more in dead cap money. Philadelphia Eagles know their problem. They believe they can fix it. They researched and found the best possible guy who will take the job, who will do his best, and has at least a bunch of checks in his direction that could help him do it. Make no mistake about it. Sirianni has got to fix the quarterback position, or else everybody goes.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
David Thorpe joins us from True Hoop. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Troop's a great place to go for all the NBA discussions you could ever want. David, one game in, they don't have much of a bench. I thought they shared the ball, but they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Give me your early sense of the Nets and how it's going to go.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's going to go fine. They don't need all three of their stars to be great on offense. Two are fine. Three might be better. There's a feeling out process for sure. I like what Steve Nash and they're running D'Antoni, basically, you know, middle pick and roll, spread it out, kind of take turns with their guys. But they're doing more than that. They're adding some other screen to screener stuff. They're coming up with different ways to get into ball screen action. It's just not hard for them to score. The question, I think, Doug, is going to be, and you remember very well, it wasn't that long ago where the big three, kind of like the first time three superstars came to Miami, it was a little bit different. They struggled to kind of figure it out at first, but there was only two ball dominant primary ball handlers. Bosch was a big. He was a scorer, but he was a big. And it's different. Wade very quickly realized, okay, LeBron's better, just like he did for Team USA that previous summer. And they kind of just melded together. This is different. All, you know, Durant is the primary ball handler scorer, as are the two guards. I don't know how it's going to go as the season goes on. I don't think it's hard for them, Doug, to play well. As you said, they know how to play. They know how to share the ball. They're all supremely skilled scorers. There isn't a bench, which is why I think it'd probably be smart to maybe take turns bringing one of those guys, not off the bench to begin the game, but quickly go to the bench, get your rest, and then lead the second unit. Sometimes let it be KD, sometimes Kyrie, sometimes Harden, to give that second group more punch, and also to break up the big three together so that they're not just taking turns. They've got to kind of come up with a more seamless plan. I think it's going to be fine. They're not my favorites to win the East. It's possible. Harden's got to get in a lot better shape too, Doug. And Kyrie, who's betting on Kyrie right now? I'm not. Maybe he'll be fine. But I'm skeptical. And so I think they're going to be a very good offensive team, a little bit worse defensively. And there's a long way to go before I believe in them as real contenders.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What about Kyrie? How do people in the league view him?
You know, it's funny. He is one of the more enigmatic players for reasons that are less than obvious. The other ones are obvious. He's never been a super high usage guy. I studied him a lot when he was with Boston, and he definitely was a problem in Boston. But it wasn't because he's a ball hog. Everyone has incredible respect for his talent. He's hard to get along with. He's hard to buy in with as a teammate, to really believe that he cares about you. He seems to be a very caring person about the world, and that's great. And players appreciate that. But there's still a disconnect there. What I always say, though, Doug, and I said this long ago about DeMarcus Cousins when he was really struggling. In fact, I literally told this to George Call directly at dinner one night. What he is now doesn't mean it's who he's going to be later. Like, players are allowed to grow up. We're all rooting for Kyrie to do that. He certainly is in a position in terms of talent and need where they have a chance to be a really special team if he figures it out with those guys. I think Harden understands his legacy. All that's left is to win. We know what Durant wants to get accomplished. Kyrie's got to do the same. I think it's possible. Even then, just because those three guys are amazing and might score 85 points a game together, they still got to find a way to score another 20-25, and it's a challenge. They've got some work to do, and they got to prevent the other team from scoring 130.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Yeah, I think it's really interesting because they're all unbelievable talents. They don't have a training camp, so they can't put in whatever new scheme they want offensively, and defensively they can't work on their rotations. I do think you can add to the bench with, you know, some pieces of guys who want to come in as a role player and maybe think you got a chance to win the whole thing. I think it's going to be a fascinating experience. I guess here's my thing to people who say they can't come out of the East. Who do you like in the East? If you don't like them, that's fine. Embiid's having a great year, but do you like the Sixers with how Simmons is playing? Like, who do you like in the East if you don't like the Nets?
Yeah, I don't like the Nets the most. And before I forget, let me say this. No one's thinking about this now, but this is going to be the best G League system in a year in terms of talent in history of the league. And as a talent league, it's number two in the world after the NBA, not in terms of ability to play in the game, because a lot of these guys are very young, but the talent is overwhelming. I have zero doubt there'll be G League players that can be rotation players for the Nets and help them get better. I could say that about a few other teams too. So yes, help can come for sure. Once you start seeing these guys play in their season in the bubble, everyone will kind of see who those guys are. I like the Sixers. They were my dark horse team initially with all those shooters around and a motivated Embiid. I don't know that I trust Simmons enough. I think the jury's out on that. I think he's relieved he's not in Houston. I still think Milwaukee is going to be the best team for lots of different reasons, but mostly because Giannis isn't playing so well and they're still very good. They're still an amazing shooting team right behind the Clippers in three-point shooting. I think, you know this well, having followed basketball so long. I think losing painfully helps inform you going forward. They've had two very painful postseason losses. We should see a more resolved team come playoff time. They're going to be a top two seed. Boston's another interesting team. I'm not ready to say they can't do it, and this is going to sound really stupid and crazy, but the Raptors are much, much better than what we're seeing now. I'm not suggesting they're the best team in the East, that's for sure. But Chris Boucher has been probably going to win the most improved player award. He's been terrific. Siakam has not been what they need. They're not defending with the same passion. I think Nick Nurse is great. Do I think they'll win the East? No. But can they make the playoffs and then knock a team off? Yes. I still see some pedigree there that's pretty special. It's going to be a jumbled East for sure. I don't favor Brooklyn. They're good enough, but I like some of those teams better.
Yeah, David Thorpe joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Let's dig into Milwaukee there. They thought they were getting Bogdanovich, and they didn't. They did get Jrue Holiday, who I think both of us love. What's your take on Milwaukee as they've tried to, change things and work things out, and they signed Giannis to that long-term deal?
Well, I mean, that's obviously a breath of fresh air for them. For them, it comes down to defense because I think their offense has actually gotten better with Jrue. I think Giannis is, he's had his free throw struggles and his shooting struggles. I think, though, Giannis also realizes what LeBron has long realized, that you're not winning championships, in the first 20 games of the season. So I still think he's going to get much better. I think as a team, they're going to shoot great, and this is going to be a theme you hear me say a few times. I don't know if they have to flip a switch, but I think you're going to see another level of defense for them as we get closer to the season. Close to the postseason. I've learned my lesson watching the old LeBron Cavaliers team when they just were awful defensively. And then come playoff time, they were a completely different team. I think Milwaukee is going to reach another level or two up. We need to see DiVincenzo play well. I thought he would have more of a breakout year than what he's had. It's early. They played, 14 games. So there's still some time there. I thought DJ Augustine was a good sign for them. It's not working out great for him. He was better with the Magic before. We still need to see him make some progress. And Holiday will still figure stuff out. Like you said, they barely had a training camp. It's a brand new situation for them. They're a team that I think is going to get much, much better as the year goes on.
All right, the Clippers, they tried to change things, running a different offense, have a different head coach. They added some different pieces. Where are the Clippers as of today?
Yeah, I thought they were the best team on paper, even better than the Lakers. I realize I'm alone in that. But I thought they'd be the best team this year. It would take a while. I thought they'd be top two, top three halfway through the year, and they would, barring injuries, likely get better. I love what they're running. I love the offense we're seeing from them, the ball movement. They play like an old team. They don't get to the free throw line that much. They're the best right now. They're the best shooting team in the league. I think they've got five guys taking at least four threes a game, and they're all making over 40%. Kennard's making over 50% of his threes. I think he's at 51%. And here's the trick that people may not remember. I had David Griffin on a podcast I did years ago, and he told me a great story where he said, I said, how are you guys so bad in the regular season, so much better in the postseason, beyond just effort? And when he was in Cleveland with LeBron, he said, Ty Lue took the team's defense over in the postseason. I mean, he said this on a podcast, so it ain't private. He said he let other guys do it during the year, and then he put his own stamp on things, and it made a difference. And so I keep thinking about that with the Clippers. They're not playing with force. They're not guarding with force. They're just really talented and great shooters. If Ty does the same thing, or if someone else takes over in the postseason and can ramp up that defense, I mean, come on, it should be an elite defense. And right now, it's just pretty good. If it gets to be elite level like we think it can be, and they put a little more urgency attacking the rim, getting the free throw line more, I still like them just a tad better than the Lakers. But, it's pretty much a coin flip.
Okay. Steph has had some unbelievable games, especially since Draymond's been back. He's like a, it's a whole different deal because of Draymond's ability to lead, defend, and pass the ball. And really, for me, it's take Steph off the point. You know, let him. That's where he's even more dangerous, is moving around at times. But when I first saw him, I was like, I don't like it. I don't. The pieces that they have, Wiseman is coming into his own, and he's going to be a very good player. But I don't know if that fits with how Steph has always played or wants to play, where you have other guys that can really handle and create. In what they're reconstructing in Golden State, ultimately, do you think it can work?
I do, yes. You're perceptive to pick up what they're trying to do. They made a change, and I don't know when. I watched them here and there, but I watched them last night, and here's Wiseman getting dunk after dunk after dunk from the dunk spot. I think he had 20 in the game. That is not where they played him a lot to start the season. And that's something that's common for them. They typically haven't had the guy that can jump to 13 feet and catch a ball like he did a couple times last night. So now they've got to do what we call it, we call their offense the Cuisinart. Now they've just got a new machine, and now they've got Wiseman at the dunk spot. And you stretch a defense two ways. Think about a rubber band. You can't just pull a rubber band without putting the other end down. You have to hold the other end. Well, right. Wiseman is the holder. That's what stretches the defense out. Is if you leave him for a moment, like what's happening last night, with the Spurs, he's going to dunk everything at the rim, and he's obviously he has no idea what he's doing. He's going to get much, much better. I think Draymond's got to score more for them to be scary. He made a couple threes last night. You're exactly right. He's an incredible facilitator. He in a sense is their point guard when Steph isn't. Curry's at another level. He's been the best plus minus guy in the league since they invented the stat by a monster margin, much better than LeBron. Of course, LeBron was older, yes, but Steph is that kind of player. This year, I think they can be good. They're a solid team, and I don't think people expected that. Their young guys are coming. They've got to get a little more help on the bench. They need another big shooter. Eric Paschal is a good five, but he could use some help. And then, you know, next year with Clay, as Wiggins said a week ago, with Clay, they could be scary. Now, I don't know if Wiggins will be there, but he's starting to come around. He's playing the best defense of his career. They're a good team, and quite frankly, if they make the playoffs, which they would as of today, having Steph Curry, I mean, when you think about who you want to play against if you're an NBA team, that's the one cat that's got to scare the heck out of you. So they're going to be an intriguing team all year, I think, if they stay healthy. I don't know that they get, you know, past even a first round. But if they can get that this year with Clay next year, it's a very different story, and they could be very good.
David Thorpe. Go to truehoop.com. You want to you want to download their pods. You want to read all of the different stuff and analysis of what's going on in the league. It's a great site, and you get insight from guys that have been in and around the game for 20 years plus. David, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, sir. Be safe.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Last night, the Brooklyn Nets lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Okay. And what's interesting about it is Kyrie Irving had 37. Kevin Durant had 38. And James Harden had 21 points. You know? So, look, it causes everybody, because they lost in overtime to the Cleveland Cavaliers, it causes everyone to sit here and think to themselves, that'll never work. They don't play any defense. But the truth is that while everybody quickly jumps ship, and I even, you know, put out a tweet about Matador defense, while everybody likes to jump ship, at the very, very first sign of any sort of issue, the truth is this, that I still think the Brooklyn Nets are going to be pretty good. Yes, Colin Sexton had 42 against them and was a meh. And yes, they have had to deplete the resources of their bench in order to consummate the trade for James Harden. And yes, Kyrie Irving is he here? Is he not here? We don't know. All of those things can in fact be true. But there isn't another team in the NBA that can roll out a better offensive unit. And while their defense is not great, it isn't like DeAndre Jordan can't protect the rim. And it isn't like Kevin Durant has become a plus defender. Is Joe Harris? Probably not, but he's solid. He's fine. He's good. Is James Harden? Not really. Is Kyrie Irving? Not really. But what the Heat were defensively last year in the playoffs, the Nets can be offensively in the playoffs this year. And do I think it's gotten to the place that that fans think that it is? Like, if you ask a fan, they're like, no, he plays defense in the NBA anyway. Truth is, the two teams in the NBA Finals last year were the two best defensive teams in the bubble and maybe outside of the bubble as well. Right? The Bucks would be the third team. And when the Warriors were great, the Warriors were analytically the best defensive team in the league. So there's a lot of, but the league, just like the NFL, is trending in the way of offense, and there aren't better offensive players than what you have. There's also the idea that James Harden becomes a much better weapon when he's a facilitator. He still draws a ton of fouls. He still can make threes. Only now he's not as ball dominant, like some of his weaknesses, which I believe he wanted to play more defense in the playoffs, but he simply didn't have the gas in the tank because he had to carry him on offense. KD, Kyrie, James Harden, by themselves, top five, top 10 in the league as individual scorers. Combined, a stoppable but virtually unstoppable force through the course of seven games. You know, they all have, there's always issues there, right? Like, if you want to say, like, LeBron is better because, okay, but I don't think LeBron has it in him to be as good offensively as consistently as any of those three, simply because of the attrition of the amount of years he's been in the league. Anthony Davis, there have been still some disappearing times, although he's immensely talented, and I would put him in that same group. Who's the Lakers' third guy? Dennis Schroeder? There is no comparison between Dennis Schroeder and Kyrie Irving. Now, if you want to say the Lakers' supporting cast is better, I'd agree. But remember, the Nets between now and the end of the season can add any of the buyout guys, and they could add some young pieces to the G League, and there's some talented dudes there as well. They'll fill out that bench. Is it a dangerous game to play for 2 years? Yeah. KD's been hurt a good amount. Kyrie's been hurt physically a lot and mentally recently. But I'm not selling stock right now on the Nets just because Kyrie is weird, hard to coach, and they don't traditionally play a ton of defense. Because I do this with the NCAA tournament. They're out. Take them out. Who are you going to put them in? They're in. Put them in. Who are you going to take out? If you tell me you don't like the Nets, then there has to be somebody else you like better. You can go Raptors all you want. I don't see it. I haven't seen Pascal Siakam display any sort of ability in the playoffs as of yet. And though I love the Fred VanVleet story, he's paid at a level, I believe, not commensurate with his actual talent right now in the league. As a wildly underpaid starting or backup guard, he's great. As an overpaid starting guard, he's good. He's not Kyrie. You like the Celtics? Okay. Their third best player is Kemba Walker, and their top two players are not as good as James Harden and Kevin Durant. They're just not. You literally have the best scorer in the league in Durant and probably the best scoring point guard, combo guard in Kyrie, and the best, whatever you want to call what James Harden plays, in James Harden. And then you have maybe the best shooter, catch and shoot shooter with space, in Joe Harris. I mean, 3-point shooting contest aside. He's not Steph, but it's because Steph can do so many other things. And then you got a rim protector. And I don't hate their coaching staff. I don't like what Kyrie said about their coaching staff. But you have to factor in, they basically had no training. They had no training camp together, as this team is. And even the team that was together, that training camp was shortened. Kyrie and KD hadn't played in over a year. Kyrie barely played last year. Like, all of this stuff is a work in progress. So you can take a snapshot of what they were last night, but that is not their defining moment. The first game of the big three together for the Miami Heat scored 80 points. It was hard. They got to the finals the first year. They won two NBA championships and then lost in their fourth year. I don't know if that's what happened because I don't know if they'll defend or how it'll all work out once they get to the playoffs. I do know this. The league has always been about who has the best players, who can just make the biggest shots. It's also been about defense, about toughness, and I have questions about it, but I'm not selling my stock that I haven't purchased yet.